Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello, listeners. Luke's English Podcast is made possible thanks to donations from my listeners. And thank you from the bottom of my heart. If you sent me a donation recently, you're helping to keep the podcast alive and keep the whole ship afloat. But also, the podcast is supported by sponsorship. And I just talk briefly about my sponsors at the beginning of each episode. The sponsor for this episode is iTalki. If you're looking for a one-to-one teacher to work on your speaking, your fluency, or in fact any other aspect of your English, or if you've got specific things you need to prepare for, like job interviews and stuff, use iTalki to get yourself a one-to-one teacher. It's a very professional service. Loads of teachers to choose from. They've got lots of different skill sets, teachers with particular sets of skills for teaching exam English or business English or general English or whatever, okay? Competitive prices. It's actually quite affordable when you consider how expensive one-to-one teaching can be. And also, it's all very flexible. It's all done through Skype, so you can just have your English lesson in the comfort of your own home or at work or wherever you want. And when you buy some talking time, iTalki will send you a voucher for a free lesson because you listen to this podcast. To get that offer and to get started, go to teacherluke.co.uk/talk or click an iTalki logo on my website. You're listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk. Hello and welcome to episode 599 of Luke's English Podcast, a podcast for learners of English, presented by me, Luke Thompson, an English teacher and comedian from England, now living in Paris. Okay, was that one sentence? It was. Good. If you don't believe me, just rewind and check. Anyway, in this episode, you're going to hear a conversation I recorded last week. Right here in my flat in this room, the conversation is with my friend Oliver G, who's a journalist and podcaster from Australia, now also living in Paris like me, and probably, I don't know, about 5 or 6 million other people who live here. As some of you will remember, Oliver has been on the podcast before in episode 495, over 100 episodes ago, can you believe it? In that episode, we talked all about Australian things, including Australian English. So while you're listening to Oliver's voice and you're wondering about his accent and other Australian things, check out episode 495 and you can hear all about Australian stuff. Oliver is a podcaster and YouTuber who makes content about Paris and France in English. Recently, I joined Oliver on one of his live YouTube video walking tours in Paris, which you can find on the page for this episode. You can find the video there. And it was a lot of fun talking to him and wandering around a lovely park. And I thought it was high time I invited Oliver back on the podcast for a chat and to tell us some stories. And as a journalist, Oliver is very interested in stories. That's what journalism is all about. A lot of the time, finding stories, covering stories, reporting stories, and generally reporting events in the form of stories. So that's what I wanted from this conversation. I wanted Oliver to tell us some stories, not bedtime stories or fairy tales. I'm talking more about true stories of people's lives, moments that people experience, big events that happen in the world, and things like that. We communicate so much of what we do and see via stories, either in the media or in the way we talk to each other and describe things. Stories are central to the way that we communicate with each other. So the focus for me in this conversation was to let Oliver tell us some of his stories. And I just wanted to hear him speak about these things in particular. So first of all, the Notre Dame Cathedral fire. When the world famous Notre Dame Cathedral in Paris caught fire recently and You must have seen it on the news. I'm sure you saw the video footage of the cathedral in flames and the spire on the top of the cathedral falling down, and the whole thing seemed to be engulfed in flames. So when the cathedral caught fire recently, Oliver actually went down to the cathedral with his camera in order to see and record what was happening and to capture the moment, not just the burning cathedral, but actually people's reactions to it. He also interviewed a tour guide all about it for his podcast, in which they described it in full detail. So Oliver can tell us about what he saw that evening, generally what happened at the cathedral and what's happening next. And there are some pretty weird coincidences in his story too. In fact, there are quite a lot of weird coincidences and special moments described during this episode. I also wanted stories about Oliver's time working as a journalist, how he started, and particularly moments when he ended up meeting some famous people, especially comedians that we're big fans of. For some reason, I love hearing stories of people meeting famous people. So listen on to find out who Oliver has met, how he met them, and what they were really like in person. And there's one comedian who is particularly famous at the moment, not just at the moment, but someone who's particularly famous, a very big comedian. Oliver got to meet him in really quite an intimate situation, and I love the story. Oliver has lived in Sweden and now lives in France, so I wanted him to tell me about his experiences of learning languages, particularly moments when he felt challenged and when he'd made significant progress. And finally, there's the story of Oliver's honeymoon road trip around France on the back of a scooter. Imagine two newly married people traveling all around France, even crossing over the Alps, the mountains, all on the back of a small 50cc Vespa scooter. Listen on to find out what happened. So those are the main topics: Notre Dame Cathedral fire, meeting famous people, learning languages, and a honeymoon road trip. There's also some chat at the start about my podcast, as Oliver noticed that Luke's English podcast has had over 50 million downloads in total, and I'm approaching episode 600 now. So we talk a bit about podcasting versus using YouTube as different platforms for what we do. Oliver, yeah, he's a podcaster like me, but he also does quite a lot of stuff on YouTube and Facebook Live and things like that. So we're about to jump into the conversation now. Just before we do, let me prepare you a little bit, because the conversation starts quite quickly, okay? So let me just prepare you slightly. So in episode 495, if you remember, we said that the better people know Oliver, the shorter his name becomes, which is kind of normal, isn't it? You know, this is normal. It's like nicknames. People make your name shorter if they know you well. So acquaintances probably call him Oliver, and then friends call him Ollie, and then close friends might call him Ol, and then really close friends might just call him O. All right, so I just wanted to remind you of that, because it's the first thing that you'll hear. So you might immediately get lost and go, wait a minute, what? I'm lost already. Just remember, the better people know you, the shorter your name becomes. That's how this begins. All right, so you're now ready to go. I'll speak to you again on the other side of the conversation, but for now, here we go. Let's get started. And here is Oliver G. So, Ollie, you have been on my podcast. Ollie?
Yeah.
We established this before, that the better people know you, the shorter your name
becomes.
That's
right. Wow, good memory. Did you listen to the last one, or did you remember?
No, I just remember it.
I forgot that I said that. It's true. Oliver to Ollie. Some people call me Ol, and some people call me O.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm on Olive. I'm on Ollie.
I think you're comfortable Ollie. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So
we'd have to get married to get to an Ol or something.
Really?
Yeah, I think so.
Is that what your wife calls you?
She calls me Oliver.
Oh,
she's a Swede, though, so like all the rules are out the window.
The Swedish are more formal or something.
They're practical.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So
that's
just
what it says on the birth certificate. I was going to do my Swedish accent, but that's what it says on the birth certificate. That's what I'll go by. That's what they're like.
I see. Mm. I see. No abbreviations. Just that's the given name. That's the name I'm using.
Exactly.
Okay. So you have been on the podcast before, right? But just remind us of who you are and what you do. Explain yourself.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So I'm Australian, and that's what we talked about last time I was on your show. All about Australia, animals, that kind of stuff. But usually I don't talk about that kind of stuff.
No.
It's just a backstory, really.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm a as you said, I'm a journalist in Paris. I also have a podcast, which is very Paris-based. So talking about Paris with people doing interesting things that are Paris or France-related. Tour guides, chefs, ambassadors, mayors, TV hosts, whatever. People that are doing something, and the real guest every week is Paris.
Yeah.
So it always comes back to Paris.
And it's the Eiffel Tower. That's the name of the podcast.
I said that, yeah.
Yeah.
You can tell that you've done a lot more of this than I have. By the way, congratulations on 50 million downloads.
Oh, yeah.
I was looking at your site today. I was like, 50 million? Yeah, that's incredible. Crazy.
That is across all the episodes, of course.
It's incredible, though.
So I'm approaching 600 episodes now. So you could do, you know, what's 50 million? It's more than 50 million now.
Yeah.
I haven't updated it. Yeah. I don't know if, you know, it's more.
I don't think you should until 100 million.
Really?
Yeah. 50 million is a good number.
It's a good round number.
You know, when people say, my podcast is in the top 7, it's like, just go with top 10. You know, there's a cutoff.
Yeah.
Or top 18 podcasts about Paris. Nah, let's say top 20. Same with you. Stick on 50.
Okay, really?
Yeah, I think so. I don't know.
No, I think you're maybe right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you divide 600, if you divide 50 million by 600, what do you get? I think it's just my maths isn't very good, but it's,
I'd say it's 8 million a year.
You're throwing time into it as well.
Or you 50, want it to per episode.
50, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 50 million, divide it, because I want to know how many that is, because the main thing in podcasting is how many downloads each episode
gets.
That's
right, yeah, that's right.
Divided by 600, let's say. So we're looking at, no. Did I get the number wrong? That's 5 million divided by 600.
Yeah.
I need another zero in there. So it's
zero.
I'm trying to use the Google calculator. It's about 83,000 downloads per episode.
That's insane. That is insane. As another podcaster who gets about 3,000 or 4,000 per episode, maybe 5,000, you are flying. Congratulations.
Oh, thanks.
Mm.
You know that, you know, YouTube is there's a lot more views or downloads to be gained on YouTube.
Yeah.
A lot of my English teaching contemporaries who have YouTube channels and stuff are getting like millions, millions and millions.
Well, you've got a pretty sizable YouTube channel for I mean, it doesn't look like you totally invest, you know, videos.
I don't do videos. Mm. I don't really, yeah, I'm not really taking care of my YouTube channel in the way that I should. I've got over 25,000 subscribers.
I saw that the other day.
A lot of potential.
Yeah. You're letting it grow. You're hoping that, like, you know, when you leave a plant in an abandoned warehouse, you're hoping that it's going to sprout and something's going to happen. But
the thing is about the YouTube channel, right, is that I never set out to be a YouTuber.
Yeah.
I'm not a YouTuber.
Mm.
So I do have a few videos that I made back in the day, like 10 years ago.
Mm.
English accents,
right?
Well, there's an accent video, which is just, I never intended to really publish that video,
right,
but I found it in my hard drive and I was like, I'll put that out, that's all right.
Yeah.
But it was the ones that got me the most followers was a series called London Native Speaker Interviews.
Right.
And I've been talking about them on the podcast recently because I'm going back through the videos and sort of analyzing some of the English that came up in them. And so they're kind of fairly clickbaity titles for learners of English. London Native English Speaker Interviews.
Mm.
And like the thumbnail of one of the videos has got these three pretty girls smiling on the front, which, you know, it's very basic to say, and, you know, potentially sounds kind of sexist or something, but the fact is that on YouTube, if you do have a thumbnail that looks like that, people will click on
That's why the videos that you and I have done on my channel never go anywhere.
Exactly.
It's just picture me and you. We should have focused on the park. But I'm the same as you. So I got a YouTube channel, but I didn't set out to be a YouTuber. But I figured, sort of different to the way that you've gone about it, like, I do the videos as bonus stuff. So I do invest time into it, but not to grow the channel, rather to give something extra to the people, just as you and I did. What, 2 weeks ago?
Yeah.
A month ago?
Oh, maybe about a month ago.
Yeah.
We walked around the Square de Batignolles, which is a lovely park.
Yeah.
And we did a live walk around the park. First 5 minutes are available free on YouTube.
That's
and then the rest of it is for your subscribers, your Patreon subscribers.
Exactly. So those people that want to support the show. And as we're talking, I see you got a YouTube hat.
Yeah, I've got a YouTube hat.
Not on your head, in the background.
I do have a cap which was given to me by the guys at Google.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So I went to Google with Sarah Donnelly and Noman Hosni and Robert Hain and Freddie Ango and maybe some other people I'm forgetting. I don't think so. I think that was everyone. And we did a show at Google, a stand-up show, and it was like an hour or two in the afternoon one day. Mm. I think that Google basically said to its employees, we're going to give you a stand-up show today. And so we had like a bunch of people from Google in the audience. We did it at one of their stages.
Right.
It felt like the place where you do a TED Talk.
Or where they come and launch the new, where Steve Jobs would be if he worked at Google.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it was like this stage, very nice looking place. And
I don't
we
know
did
if
a
that's conducive
show.
To good comedy, though.
It was very weird, strange. Like corporate things like that are usually quite weird.
I'm going to play basketball tonight with the lads from Google.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I don't know how that happened, but I hooked up with some of them somehow.
Great.
Every month I play with Google at a really nice court in the suburbs.
That's really good.
Yeah. I never got a hat, though.
Well, you should ask for one. They'll give you one if you just ask for it. Yeah. So we did the show and it was good fun, a bit weird during the, do a comedy show during the day. And then afterwards, the guy brought out all these caps and said, here you go, guys.
Merch.
Have a YouTube cap. And I was like, that's great.
Yeah.
Never going to wear it.
No. Pride of place, though, up there.
Yeah, I put it up on the shelf.
Yeah.
So there you go. So somehow I'm a YouTuber without being a YouTuber.
Amazing. Yeah.
I don't know how I've managed to do
that. A man
of
many hats.
Yeah, well, one really that I don't wear. Anyway, so as a journalist, right? And let's talk first about the Eiffel Tower, the interviews you do, the podcasts you do about Paris, and the guests you've talked to. Any sort of recently, any moments that stand out?
Yeah, absolutely. So even today, before I came to meet you, I was editing an episode, and like I said before, I have authors on sometimes, and today's episode's with a woman called Cara Black, who's a fictional crime writer, and she bases her murders all around Paris. So she's done like 20 books about Paris. She's pretty fun. Her heroine, like the detective, rides around Paris on a scooter. And so I have a scooter as well, like a moped, like a Vespa, not one of those little, the ones that you stand on, you know, like a proper. And she asked me if she could write, if she could be on the back. And I was like, let's do it. And so we rode around Paris and then we did some videos and stuff. I, at the end of the day, I got home and I was like, what a great job I've got.
Yeah.
You know, like this woman, excellent books. I'm reading one now and just like you really describes. But she lives in San Francisco.
Yeah.
Comes to Paris once a year and then or maybe twice a year and just researches the hell out of, the city 20 years ago where the books are set. So I get these moments where I talk to her about how she writes. And then ride around the city with her and then film like one of the walk shows like we did. It's just wonderful.
Yeah.
It's great. It's such a... I can't believe it. I pinch myself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fantastic. You recently did an episode about the Notre Dame fire.
True.
The Notre Dame Cathedral fire, which was a very big moment here in Paris and sort of around the world because everyone saw the videos and the footage and everyone was quite shocked by it.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of the most visited tourist attractions in the world.
That's
so everyone,
right, yeah.
A lot of people around the world have got some sort of connection to it or are interested in it. So, I mean, I did have some listeners post comments on my website saying, can you talk about this on the podcast?
Right.
But you're probably the person to talk to about it.
Right.
How did you cover that event?
Well, it was weird because, so before I was a podcaster, I was a journalist, politics, terrorism, this kind of thing, serious stuff, right? And then I sort of threw it all in to do more entertaining stuff. It was one of those moments similar to all the other tragic things that have happened in Paris in the past 5 years. When it was a Monday, so I was playing basketball with the Google guys. And when it finished...
Was it with the Google guys?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, cool.
So out in the suburbs, like I said, so when it finished, I looked at my phone. And because this podcast that it was about Paris, yours is in Paris, but because mine's specifically about Paris, I got, similar to what you said, I got so many messages from people around the world because it had been burning for 2 hours,
You didn't know?
No.
Because you were playing basketball?
Yeah. So I had all these messages from them, but also from friends and family, not saying, are you all right? They were saying, why are you not doing something about this? This is like the main thing in your city that's your job and you're not covering it.
Yeah.
And so I was like, oh my, I jumped on the scooter and just headed straight down there. And at that point, it was like 10 o'clock or something. It was still burning and smoldering, but I did a video, like just a Facebook Live video, and I just walked around. It was really powerful seeing the Parisians singing hymns and just watching it and being quiet and sort of just, it was really a powerful moment. And I tried to capture that rather than a lot of the news reporters over the next maybe week or so from that moment on were just standing out the front of it, you know, like on a box, you know, with the camera on them saying, you know, this is what has happened and this is what's going to happen and this is where the money is getting whatever.
Yeah.
No one knows what's that. I was like, that's boring. Like, anyone can see that's on 100 stations right now. Maybe it's 1,000. So I was more interested in sort of getting that Paris reaction to it. And then, funnily, that very day, I was doing an episode with a guy who runs tours inside the Notre Dame. So we'd been recording it, and he texted me. He's like, don't release that episode. You know, like, we have to redo this.
So the day that the fire happened, yep. earlier in the day, you'd been doing a conversation with a tour guide.
Yep.
Who is a sort of an expert on the cathedral.
Yep.
And after the fire started, he contacted you and said, don't release that episode, meaning we need to do another one.
Exactly, because we'd been talking about... I'd be interested to go back and listen to it again now, but we were talking about the Notre Dame and how important it was and how much he loved it. And I'd done the tour. They do a private tour, which they won't be able to do for years now.
Mm.
They take you inside after it closes. So you're in there when it's totally empty and there's a choir practicing.
Yeah.
And they take you up to this big organ at the top. You know, and you're just sort of walking through all the, what's the word, like the crown of thorns and all these really...
Artifacts.
Artifacts, yeah, that everyone was petrified would be damaged, but I think they were all saved.
Yeah, I'm not sure really of all the details, but yeah, I hear that most of the major artifacts...
Well, there was a tunic belonging to some bishop or a saint or whatever, and that was saved, and then there was this crown of thorns. Anyway, so I got the guy back in for a proper lot. We talked for like an hour. My podcast is usually 30 minutes max. And I just let him talk. And he texted me after on the way home. And he's like, oh, thanks for that. It was really like therapeutic, you know?
Yeah.
Just talking about this that was so important to him.
People were really sort of traumatized by it.
Oh, yeah.
Can you try and tell us about what the effect it had on Parisians?
I think one of the big things about it is... Beyond religion, we get to religion in a second. It's an architectural like marvel in the center of the city, sort of different to the Eiffel Tower. Eiffel Tower's very new. Eiffel Tower's 130 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Notre Dame's 850 years old, I think.
Okay.
So everybody knows it. It's been the center point for centuries.
And there are even like well-known stories that take place there.
Absolutely.
Like the Hunchback of Notre Dame, which I think is also a Disney film.
That's right. Which I watched randomly the night before.
What?
Yeah. I had never seen it. And we had guests in Paris and they were like, we should watch the Hunchback of Notre Dame. And I was like, yep, it's time. So weird.
That is really weird.
Yeah, it was really weird.
And is it a good film?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's a Disney film.
Yeah.
The songs didn't capture me the way some of the other Disney films have. But that was weird as well. Everything was weird.
Yeah.
But it means a lot to everybody. And all the tourists who've been here before that were, you know, texting me and putting posts on Instagram or whatever. Everyone's been there. Everyone's seen it. And it's beautiful. And then the religion side of it. So when I was walking around doing the video, I hadn't had time to process it. I jumped on the scooter, got down there, started filming.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until... they were singing the hymns, and I was like, oh my God, for me, it's not a church or a cathedral. It's a really beautiful architectural masterpiece, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And I look at it like that. But then I was like, oh, hang on. All these people who are Catholic or even beyond any religion that have a different connotation or relation to it. And I was like, whoa, this just blew my mind to think of it from other people's perspective as well.
I wonder how they were processing the event, because I mean, you know, if this is like the house of God, you know, it's a church, and to see it burning down, like, how could they sort of understand why it was happening?
Yeah,
it must have been mind-blowing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You could feel, if you see the videos, so I cut down a bit of the video that I did. I did like an hour-long video just walking, very sort of respectful. It wasn't, I didn't go saying to people, what do you think of this, you know?
Yeah.
Which if I was doing my journalist job, that's what I would have had to do, which I think was much nicer to just sort of, like in a sort of, not like in a voyeuristic way, but more just capturing a moment. And there was one guy who said to me in English, he's like, oh yeah, and you're live blogging? Or something like that, or vlogging, you're vlogging this. And I was like, this is like a moment in history, and I talk about Paris, that's my job. I think it would be wrong for me not to have filmed it.
I think there's a respectful way to do it and a disrespectful way to do it.
Yeah.
So this guy, it's like, you're vlogging this?
Yeah.
In his mind, vlogging means, you know, certain famous YouTubers, like, you know, who's the guy who got in trouble because of the vlogging he did in Japan?
Yep.
What's the guy? We don't need to mention his name.
No.
But there was a guy who...
It's because you forgot it.
I've forgotten it, and I don't really care about him either.
Yeah.
He got into a lot of trouble for the way he was doing vlogging while traveling in Japan.
That's right. Suicide Forest.
It was very disrespectful.
Yeah.
Lots, not just the thing in the Suicide Forest.
That's right. Yeah,
but also the way he was doing his vlogs in Tokyo.
That's right.
He was being very antisocial and just very rude. Just
filming people and describing them and...
All sorts of things that are extremely rude and socially wrong in Japan, like filming people without the consent at the very minimum, but also doing other things like throwing himself on the floor in front of cars, like bouncing off the front of cars and things, and doing other stuff like that. So it was just kind of very annoying. Mm. But so maybe the guy that spoke to you in the street had that kind of thing in mind, but your version was a much more respectful sort of videoing.
There's a good... So I cut the one of the hymns. It was so beautiful. I cut that and put it on YouTube. And there was a... It was a really popular video. People were really interested in it, and it really captured the mood.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I'd encourage people to check out. Just like, you know, people... It's weird, you know? It's like, you know, I don't know. It was clear how important it was to a lot of people.
It really comes through.
Yeah.
How would they find... This is just on your YouTube
channel. Yeah, if you go on the YouTube channel... Yeah. It's probably one of the most recent videos, I suppose. You probably see me and you in there as well.
Yeah, I think so.
Which is also a recent video.
Earful Tower.
Yeah.
The Earful Tower.
Which is a play on words.
Yeah.
Speaking of learning English.
Uh-huh.
Earful. Get an earful. Do you ever say that?
Get an earful of this. I might say that. Get an earful of this.
Yeah.
You can get an eyeful of something as well, can't you?
True.
Which is sort of... part of the joke.
If I was a vlogger, I would have done the... No, it wouldn't have worked. The Eiffel Tower wouldn't have worked at all.
No, it wouldn't. The Eiffel Tower. But, well, the Earful Tower, because it's like the Eiffel Tower, but earful meaning get an earful of this, meaning listen to this, and it's an audio podcast.
That's right.
It's brilliant, Oliver. Well done.
Thank you, Luke. I'm very proud of it. Sometimes I get... A lot of people don't think about it, and then I get an email from someone who goes, I've been listening for 6 months. I just got the title of it. And I'm like, Yeah,
well, good. It's a grower, maybe.
Yeah.
So just going back to Notre Dame then, because I'm interested in stories on the podcast. They say that stories are a great way to learn a language, like listening to stories and things. What was the story of the fire then? Do you know actually what happened?
Yeah, no one knows, actually.
Mm-hmm.
I know that they'd found cigarette butts from people that were working up there, the guys that were, because they're scaffolding. So they were building and repairing, which is something that has always happened on the Notre Dame since the beginning. It's kind of like that in Barcelona, the Sagrada Familia, is it?
Yeah, yeah.
It's always being fixed because it's so old, right?
Yeah.
And the guys that were working up there would smoke, and they found cigarettes in the investigations afterwards.
Yeah.
But they said that it's not proven. It's not necessarily tied.
It's not necessarily cigarette butts. I heard something about even some cans of fluid.
There's all sorts of... Here's the thing. It's not confirmed.
Yeah.
Okay. And a lot of... And in terms of story, what I think is interesting is a lot of Parisians are focusing on, like they did after the terror attacks, they're focusing on the next thing. Rebuilding, regrowth, how they're going to fix it or what they're going to do, you know, like rather than being devastated and mourning.
Mm-hmm. People have moved on. I get the impression that people... that the wounds are kind of healed, if not healing.
Mm-hmm.
But a fire started at some point in the afternoon, the end of the afternoon, and it spread. So the cathedral, in terms of the layout of the cathedral, so which parts actually burned?
So when you think of the Notre Dame Cathedral, you'd think of the two big towers, which are the west-facing towers, the two big ones with the big three arches out the front, the entrance.
Yeah.
None of that was touched.
Okay.
Okay? So it's the back side of that, the far side of that, where they had a... So the reason that the fire was so strong is it's held up by wood. So many wooden beams, they call it the forest.
Yeah.
And these old wooden beams, once they started burning, there's no airflow in there, so it just straight away burned. The roof at the back, burnt to nothing, and the spire burnt to nothing. You might have seen, people listening might have seen the spire collapsing. So that's the tallest bit. Often when you look at a view of Paris, you can see that spire. It looks like a big antenna, not the Eiffel Tower, and a lot of people don't know what it is, but that's the spire. And the other thing is that spire is from only 150 years ago. So it's not, like, in one sense, it's not the end of the world.
Yeah.
Because it was just an addition that a lot of people didn't like at the time anyway.
But it was a very dramatic moment where, you know, first of all, you see these huge flames apparently engulfing the whole cathedral.
Yeah.
And everyone's thinking, oh my God, the whole thing's going to burn down. Look at how ferocious the fire is. Massive flames, huge plumes of smoke billowing into the sky. And then that moment where the spire, which as you said is like this metal thing, it looks kind of like an antenna, a big sort of spike that comes out the roof. The spire fell down and that was shocking and so on. In a sort of way, weirdly reminiscent of 9/11, of when the moment when one of the buildings collapses. At that kind of moment of... Because 9/11, people remember it, we were thinking the entire cathedral is going to collapse. That's what everyone was thinking. In fact, I think a lot of people had accepted, oh my God, this whole thing's going to crumble to the ground now.
Yeah, I don't know. It was weird for me because I got there late, right? The burning had sort of happened. The most intense part had happened.
Yeah.
So when I looked at it and saw it, I sort of pretty quickly put together, it's not a huge flame anymore. The pictures are worse than the reality at the moment.
Yeah.
So I kind of knew, like, I never had that moment of, how bad is it going to get?
Mm.
So I can't really speak for other people, but it must have been pretty terrifying standing out there.
Apparently you could feel the heat as well.
Well, the guy that I had, weirdly, the guy I had on my show who was there in the day, was going to do a tour and was out the front about to go in. In fact, I think he'd gone in with the head of the Notre Dame and the head of the Sacré-Cœur because he wanted to do the same tour at the Sacré-Cœur and was trying to convince them to see what he did. So they're all together.
Yeah,
you should listen to my show with this guy because he tells how the head of the, I think the head of the Notre Dame ran in and then came out and goes, I was just a fire alarm, or like a false alarm. And then they saw the flames come up and he ran back in and it was panic.
Yeah.
And he was talking about how hot it was as well.
I think probably to get the whole story, listeners should listen to that episode that you did because it is a great account of the whole thing. So, you know, I'll put the link to that episode on the page for this episode, folks, on my website, and then listen to Ollie's episode. It's just, I don't remember which episode it is or...
No, neither do I. It was...
I can tell you now. Oh, it was just from the 22nd of April, Notre Dame fire, what happened and what next. So to get the whole story, folks, listen to that, and I highly recommend it.
I tell you what, it's not the... If that is your first time listening to my show, don't expect it to be like that every week. Usually it's quite upbeat.
Yeah.
And you're sending them in the deep end, but it is a good story.
That was kind of an exceptional one. It was quite serious and out of the ordinary. But otherwise, you do all sorts of other fun and things. And what are you doing after this conversation that we're having today?
If you scroll down, there's a picture of the woman that I'll be doing a little bit further there.
Her.
Yeah. So
Caroline de Maigret.
Yeah, so she is pretty cool. This is a good story, too.
Okay, so we like stories, yeah. So so this is the woman that you're going to go and meet and interview after we talk
that's
today.
That's right. So she's, I guess she's an author and a supermodel, like a proper like Vogue cover model.
Really?
Like that kind of...
A supermodel.
Yeah, super. You could use that adjective.
Yeah, yeah.
That's an adjective? Yeah. Super.
Super,
yeah.
She's not just a supermodel, she's a supermodel,
that's right.
Which is now a noun.
Yeah, that's right. She'd written a very good book called How to Be Parisian Wherever You Are that a lot of people read around the world, and it was her and a few of her Parisian friends sort of, it was kind of fun, you know, poking a bit fun at it all, but saying things like, I'm not going to quote it because I can't remember, but things like how to have an affair or how to eat a croissant, things that are pretty typical Parisian.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd sort of had her on my radar for a while because I thought she'd make a good guest, but she's huge. She's got millions of followers and everything, right? And then one day, not long ago, I was walking in this area where you live, and I saw her. In fact, I was with my wife. I crossed the road to take a picture of a street. I'm always taking pictures of stupid things. And I found myself standing next to her, and I was like, oh my God, that's Caroline de Maigret. I can't pronounce it, but I knew it was her. And I turned to my wife and I was like, is that Caroline de Maigret? And she was like, yeah, that's her. So I turned to her. I was like, hey, you're Caroline de Maigret. And she goes, yeah. And I was like, do you mind if I speak English with you? And she's like, yeah, cool. And I was like, listen, firstly, I was like, thanks for all that you do. I don't know I don't know why I said
it's a good thing to say at the
beginning. But I wanted to, you know, let her know I wasn't crazy. And I was like, listen, do you ever do interviews with Australian podcasters? That's just what I said. And she was like, what do you mean? And we got talking, waiting for the light to change. And she was sort of like, I convinced her in that period of time to sort of give me her email address or something.
Mm-hmm.
And she's giving it to me. And then she just goes, look, I'm really busy. I'm going to be honest with you. The chances of this happening is very low.
Yeah.
And I was like, ugh. And then she goes, unless we do it right now, can you record a podcast on your phone? And I was like, yeah, I guess so. It wouldn't be great, but I can do it. She goes, let's go to a cafe and do it right now.
Wow.
And I was like, yeah, cool. So we did it. And she was like really good. Like she really thoughtful answers and, you know, really good insight into being Parisian. Yeah. And then, you know, she shared it with all her followers and all that stuff. It was great. And then I texted her yesterday.
Yeah.
So this is like a month on. And I was like, well, every time I do a podcast, part two is the live video. So, you know, if you... I said something like, I can guarantee it'll be in the top 15 most fun interviews you've done. You know, something like just to be a bit...
Yeah, yeah.
Because, you know, you can imagine Vogue and all those people are calling all the time. And she's like... let's do it tomorrow. And I was like, yep, let's do it.
Wow.
So this all happened like this. So I'm going to meet her and she's going to show her neighborhood, Pigalle, live. I'm a bit nervous, but it should be, you know, the live thing, even like with everyone, with you, you're nervous that it's not, you know...
It's not going to be good enough for
not
something.
Really that. It's more about there's a lot of factors going on.
Yeah.
You need the internet to work. That's crucial.
You're going to be live streaming on your phone.
Yeah.
It's a YouTube live stream on your phone using a 4G connection, and it's literally just your phone in your hand,
A stabilizer.
You've got a stabilizer.
Because we walk, you know, so like it would be quite bumpy otherwise.
Like a little handle that keeps the phone stable.
Yeah, and like when we did it, I mean, it's different when you and I did it because we're mates. Like we can go, you know, you're busy, let's take it easy. With her, there's this added level. But on top of it, there's a lot going on. You've got to manage a decent interview. You got to make sure the camera's pointing to something.
Yeah.
Got to make sure you don't get hit by a car, tread in dog excrement.
Yeah.
But also, like, check that the connection's working. And then if people... The whole point of doing it live is so it's interactive.
Yeah.
Otherwise, like, when we did ours, we could have just filmed it and then uploaded it 2 hours later.
Yeah.
But as you remember, I hope, people were writing questions what is it like to be a comedian in Paris? And we answered them. And that's the whole point of it being live. So you got to do all those things I said before, plus make sure it's being an interactive experience.
So how do you do that?
I don't know. I don't know how I do it.
I think you just have to kind of, you just have to try and be present. You just have to listen to her a lot. And just kind of go with the flow.
The main thing, I think, the crucial is to ignore everything irrelevant.
Yeah.
So sometimes I've guessed and I can see that they're self-conscious, which makes total sense. Mm-hmm. And they're looking at people looking at them.
Yeah.
And then others just jump right into it. And they're like, the camera is what matters. Nothing else matters.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah,
and it's live. It's more fun if something goes a little bit wrong. When I did one with the Australian ambassador.
With the Australian ambassador?
Yeah. And he's got the best apartment.
Yeah.
Like up 400 meters from the Eiffel Tower. And I did some filming. This huge, he's on like the 7th floor or something. Big, you could fit in his residence where he lives. I swear to you, you could fit maybe 2 or 3 elephants in the living room and you could still walk around.
Shut up, really?
It's incredible. Incredible. Anyway, so I was filming a bit up there and then we were going to go down to the bridge. Bir Hakeim Bridge, where the, you know, Last Tango in Paris, Inception, that one that goes right near the Eiffel Tower.
Famous bridge near the Eiffel Tower.
Yeah. So we're down to do it. He has this 20-minute window to film with him or whatever. And as I'm about to press record, that little stabilizer just started spinning.
What? Right? Your little gadget stabilizer started spinning around?
Yeah, like it was from The Exorcist or something.
Oh, no.
It was just spinning. I was like, ah. Oh, this has never happened before. And he's like, it's okay. And I was like, it's not okay. I don't know how to fix it. I've got no idea how to fix it. And it was out of control. So eventually I just was like, well, I'm pressing record and I held it to stop it from spinning.
Yeah.
Like
forced it to, you gripped it in your hand.
It was terrible. The whole thing, I was holding it while trying to use the stabilizer. He was a great sport about it.
The handle's trying to spin round and you're holding it in place and your arm is killing you.
Yeah. So when it's like that, it's stressful.
Yeah.
Plus, trying to do the interview, walk across the bridge and answer people's questions. Horrible.
How many of those have you done?
About 100, 120.
100 of those live videos now?
Yeah.
Well, then how many other people have done 100 of those?
In the world? I don't know if anyone else does it. I call it a walk show.
There must be some.
It's like
other
a talk show,
it, but
you're walking.
Yeah, I tell you what.
Not in Paris, anyway.
I tell you what, though, there won't be many people. There will be some other people who do walking tours with while live streaming, right?
Yeah, sure.
But not many. And so, if you've done 100. You might be the best in the world.
Oh, I'm top 15.
Maybe the top 15, yeah.
I don't know. I think people probably don't do it because there's so many things that can go wrong. Like a bad internet connection ruins it. It totally ruins it. Like if it's fuzzy, no one wants to watch it.
It won't be long, though, before the internet is so solid.
I can't wait for that.
Yeah.
I'd like to have it with a cameraman or a camera team following around. But I love the live thing because I think... Otherwise, it should just... You really get to know the guest. You really get to see Paris, which is very important.
Yeah.
And those sort of highlight packages that you'd see from, I don't know, Rick Steves or something, you know, very heavily edited, here's Paris neighborhood.
Okay.
It's, you know, it's stale.
It's the kind of same... Yeah, there's something a lot more authentic about what you're doing.
Mm.
Can I go back to your days before you started doing the podcast and the YouTube stuff, your days as a journalist?
Yeah.
So how did you end up becoming a journalist?
That was like 8 years or 10 years ago. I was living in Sweden, and I was learning Swedish, the language, in a student town there.
Yeah,
and I like writing. I've always liked writing, so I started a blog for a local newspaper that was in Stockholm.
So wait a minute, from Australia to Sweden?
That's right. Yeah. Yeah.
Quick side question.
Yeah.
Why?
I'd met a Swedish girl.
In Australia?
Yep.
Is she your wife now?
No. That's another Swedish girl.
Different Swedish girl.
Yeah.
Okay. So you got together with a Swedish girl and
moved over. She was meant to finish her studies for a year or something.
Okay.
And I was like, well, I'll stay for a bit, see what happens. And I was like, in Sweden, another side note, they pay you, or they did, not anymore, they paid you to learn Swedish. So there's an incentive for foreigners and immigrants to adapt to the country.
That's amazing.
And I was like, well, I love languages too. You never know, maybe I'll stay longer than a month or a year. And I was like, I'll learn Swedish. It'll be fun.
And I like money.
Yeah, right. Well, that was a strong driving force in it as well. So I started learning. I contacted this local newspaper that did, news site, not newspaper, that did Sweden's news in English. I said, look, I'm going to blog about learning Swedish. I reckon it could be interesting for you. You can have it, you know, you can publish it. And it was kind of popular. I put a lot of effort into it, and that sort of got me started on that.
Had you studied journalism back in Australia?
No, but I'd studied sort of media and English and literature and things that were similar enough of a, you know, better than if I had studied, you know, veterinary science or something.
What was your degree?
Just Bachelor of Arts.
Bachelor of Arts in?
Yeah. English and French.
Yeah?
Yeah, double major.
Okay.
But my French wasn't great at all. When I came out of it, it's like, look, they don't teach you what you need, you know? They teach you the tenses that you never heard of.
Yeah.
And not, you don't know how to have a conversation with someone.
Right, right.
You couldn't have a 2-minute conversation, but you could, you know, dissect some subjunctive tense or something. Anyway.
But you kind of, you know, taught yourself to be a journalist, basically, by doing the blogging thing, which then became put, exactly. It got put on a news site.
Well, they started using it, and then I did a little internship for them.
Yeah.
Just out of curiosity. And then I wrote a story. You know Cat Stevens, the singer?
Yeah.
So Cat Stevens is
He's not Cat Stevens anymore, is he?
Well.
Is it Yusuf?
Yusuf Islam,
Islam now.
So you know his mom is Swedish, right?
Right.
So he hadn't toured for decades. And then he decided to do a comeback tour starting in Stockholm.
Yeah.
So I wrote up an article about it. And I was like, hey, if you want to use it, you can have this article. And then Cat Stevens or Yusuf Islam, his people shared it. Mm. And it kind of went viral.
Whoa.
So then I said to them, I was like, hey, I'm going to go to the concert. I'll do a review, but you have to pay me for it. And they were like, all right. And then they shared the review as well.
Whoa.
And then that was how I started. That was my first story, really. And then from there, they hired me. I worked my way up. And then
So the news site hired you because your thing that got published on their website got so many views.
Plus
they're like, this Oliver G's seems to be a hot shot.
Well, they'd seen my blog and I'd done the internship as well, so they knew who I was. It wasn't a wild stab in the dark.
Yeah.
But that was the turning point for me.
Okay.
And then I worked there for like 3 years, and at the end I was sort of the deputy editor of it.
Whoa.
And then a position came up in Paris. And I had no reason to be in Sweden anymore.
Yeah.
And I applied for the job in Paris and started here.
And it was here that you met your now...
I met her in Sweden before I left.
You met her in Sweden before you left, and, yeah. and then you had a long-distance relationship?
Well, then soon after, she came to Paris.
She came and joined you
Well,
Paris.
She came... She'd say that she came to Paris.
I
think she came to join me. But she came... No, she came to study French at Sorbonne just for like a six-month thing. A lot of Swedes do that kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know?
Okay.
And,
I'm going to talk to you about learning French and learning Swedish in a bit, but first, sticking with the journalism thing... We were talking before on the day that we did the walking tour about some of the people that you met
right.
while working as a journalist.
Yeah, and then you said stop, tell me this later.
Exactly. Yeah. You started telling me stories of people, meeting people, and I was like, wait, let's save this for the podcast. Yeah,
for all you know, I told you everything already.
I don't know. So, okay. So who, as you worked for this news site in Sweden, tell us some of the people that you met. Because you've met some people that I'm a big fan of.
Yeah, I think you are particularly interested in comedy, right? So, man, I met a lot of like comedians because they'd come through.
Yeah, a lot of certainly comedians from the UK go to Scandinavia and they do tours in Sweden and Norway and places like this because. I guess one of the reasons is because the English is so good there.
Exactly.
And so it's possible for English-speaking comedians to do shows and it works.
Exactly right.
But also because in Sweden they get a lot of English TV.
Yep.
So all the stuff like QI and Have I Got News For You and all these shows and all and probably the Michael McIntyre's Comedy Roadshow and Live at the Apollo and stuff. They get all that stuff. So they know all of our comedians. So,
by the way, speaking of QI, did I tell you that I'd met Sandy Torsvig, the host of it?
Sandy Toksvig.
In Paris the other day.
You met Sandy Toksvig in Paris the other day.
Yeah.
Listeners, there's a show called QI. Most of you will be familiar with it. If you know it at all, you'll know it from YouTube probably, unless you're in England and you watch it on telly. But most of you will probably know it from YouTube. And it's that TV panel show that used to be hosted by Stephen Fry. And it's like Stephen Fry in the middle, or it used to be, and then two guests on the right and two guests on the left.
Right,
And Alan Davis is always one of the one of the panelists. And they do, it's like a humorous quiz show about interesting information and facts and history.
QI stands for quite interesting.
QI stands for quite interesting.
And the panelists are often very funny and quick-witted.
A lot of comedians and so on on there. Yeah. And Sandy Toksvig, I mean, she's been on the TV in the UK for years. She's very funny,
Bake Off show. Yeah.
She's on Bake Off, is she?
Yeah, she's one of the judges or hosts.
One of the judges or hosts. And she's just been on TV in various ways for decades in the UK. Very funny, very, very witty, sharp-witted, intelligent
In her second
comedian.
Language, mind you.
So she's Swedish.
She's Danish.
She's Danish.
Yeah.
Okay. And you met her in Paris the other day?
Yeah.
How? Tell me more.
So this is weird, too. I was watching on YouTube clips of QI that morning, so she was very fresh in my mind. That's true.
Can you watch more Beatle videos, please? So that you know, because apparently whoever you watch, you meet.
This was the same day that I met Caroline de Magre.
Yeah. Right?
That was a big day.
Yeah.
Actually. So,
So anyway, Sandy Toksvig.
So I was in a coffee shop in Montmartre, right, that I go to a lot. And I was sitting and I saw a woman that looked exactly like her.
Yeah.
And I just was like, whoa, that must be her. And I was like, Sandy, I couldn't remember her last name. You say Toksvig. I think it's like in Danish, it'd be like Torsvig or something like that.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah.
So I looked up a picture of her just to, you know, I knew it was her, but just to confirm. And then, and I was like, well, she was sitting having a coffee. I didn't want to interrupt her. But I said to Lena, I was like, that's, you know, that's the woman we were watching this morning. And then real soon after, she stood up to leave and was walking past my table. And I stopped her, and I met a lot of sort of people that are on TV and stuff.
Yeah.
Never been as starstruck as with Sandy. Like, wow. I was totally gone.
Wow.
Yeah, it was weird. So she stopped, and I was like, Sandy Torsvig, right? And she's like, yes. And I was like, I just want to say thank you. You know, I said
this is your thing.
But I really meant it, because what else do you say? She's brought a lot of joy to me. She's very funny. I love the stuff that she's done that morning. You know, like she put a smile on my face, and I was like, she was really sweet and everything. And then I said, I'm so starstruck. I said to her, I was like, I can't even like my heart's beating really fast. And she's like, she was so sweet about it. And then we got talking, and she's like, what do you do here and everything. I said I had a podcast. I was like, look, if you want to know anything about Paris, I know it really well. Just tell me what you want. She's like, oh, we're staying here. Like, I live here. Just tell me. And she's like, okay, we were looking for this, that, this. And I was like, there. And we just got chatting a bit. Fantastic. And then I took a picture with her. I'll show you the picture afterwards. And she's like, you know, she's half my size.
Yeah.
So the picture's pretty sweet. And we had a really nice, really good laugh. That but I didn't, you know, didn't do anything with it. But
still, it's just a nice moment.
Well, yeah, I think because I've got the podcast and because I've done a lot of this interviewing and stuff, I want to talk to them. Mm. You know, like it's kind of like I think a lot of fans and stuff maybe are more content to just look or say, oh, there's what's there. But I was like, oh, I want to talk to her, you know?
Yeah. So, I mean, like I talk to my family quite a lot about, for some reason, we like this topic of like what you should say and do when you meet a famous person.
Yeah.
And we've decided in the family that the most appropriate thing to do is say, for example, sorry, are you Sandy Toksvig? And they go, yeah. And you just have to say, nice one.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Yep. Yeah,
and then you leave
them
alone.
I think you're right.
You know, and that comes from a story of a mate of mine years and years ago meeting Tony Iommi from Black Sabbath, the guitarist from Black Sabbath, in a WH Smith in Solihull.
Yeah.
In England.
And Solihull. Like, that's Stonehenge world, isn't it?
No, Solihull is in the Midlands, so Stonehenge is like southwest.
I tried.
Yeah, it's a good few days walk from there. It sounds like it could be from some mythical sort of kingdom. Solihull, the kingdom. Yeah. I hail from the kingdom of Solihull. What news of, you know, whatever. Yeah, so he bumped into, he saw Tony Iommi and he just went, excuse me, are you Tony Iommi from Black Sabbath? Yeah, I am. Nice one.
Yeah.
And then, you know, so that's now the thing.
I walked past Stephen Merchant on Charlotte Street in London once.
Oh, yeah?
And I just, this is what I did. I nodded my head and went, hey. And he went, and that was it.
Yeah.
He'd probably be pretty happy that I didn't stop him. Anyway, to answer your question.
So, Sandy Toksvig, tick.
Yep. So one of the best interviews. So the thing is, often when you're interviewing someone about their upcoming show, they want to do it in advance, which means on the phone, rather than them coming and you're doing the interview because they want to sell the tickets. You know,
they do in advance. So you talk to them over the phone, and
often
the conversation is published before they come and do their show.
Otherwise, you know, often those kind of things take a while to do. You couldn't go and meet them right before the show because then they're not going to sell tickets. But one of the good interviews I did, I think we spoke about it before, was with Bill Bailey.
Right.
Who was very... He's on QI and shows like that quite often.
Yeah, Bill Bailey, folks. I mean, if long-term listeners will know that I did a whole episode about Bill Bailey on this podcast. I like to do little episodes about different comedians.
Right.
And so I did one about Bill Bailey. He's, just for the listeners, he's that comedian who does lots of music in his performances. He's very funny and very kind of a bit surreal and a bit weird. And he plays lots of musical instruments and does lots of parodies of different musical genres and things like that.
He's trained in classical music, I think.
Yeah, he's a kind of a musical genius.
Yeah,
sort of, he can play anything, which is incredible. And he looks quite strange as well. He used to have a show called Part Troll because he kind of looks a bit like a sort of a troll that you'd find under a bridge in the Middle Ages or something. But Bill Bailey. Yeah, he's absolutely one of my comedy heroes.
Yeah. He did a whole thing on France, like a little, you can see it on YouTube, talking about the ambulances.
And
he played it on the keyboard.
The sirens.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So he was great, right? So we had a site in Norway as well.
You had a
new site.
Yeah.
And the Norwegian team were like, well, if you're going to interview Bill Bailey, get some questions from Norway in. I was like, all right, cool. So we had this time, I had to call him, and we got on the phone. And I was like, all right, Bill, we're going to start with a Sweden interview. Because the interview, what they like, the readers like, is you say, like, what do you know about Sweden? You don't just say, what's your show?
Yeah.
You know, it has to be relevant.
Yeah.
So I asked him all these questions about Sweden and stuff to start. And it amazed me how much he knew, like deep knowledge beyond, you know, most people would say, oh, I love, you know, what they want, the newspapers, they want the headline that goes something like, I couldn't live without Swedish meatballs.
Yeah.
You know, that's the headline, Bill Bailey. Bill Bailey's coming to Stockholm. You know, something better than that, but, you know, like
that something
kind of
even
thing.
More specific, like, you know, something like, I couldn't live without a specific type of Swedish meatballs.
Exactly. Or even better is if they say something like, God, England could learn from the Swedish welfare system.
Right.
That's a perfect quote, because then you got a bit of meat to the article. You got a foreign perspective, a funny foreign perspective, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So we talked, and he just knew everything. Deep knowledge about how the country made money, the music, obviously, but really inside, not beyond ABBA, basically.
Mm.
And I was kind of like, okay, you just prepared this or what? You know, in my head. And then after 15 minutes, I was like, okay, so we're gonna do this Norwegian one now. And similarly, he just nailed everything. And I didn't really know Norway that well, but yeah. I was like, I was amazed, just and funny, and just off the cuff, you know, like just really wonderful.
He's an absolutely brilliant person in a way. Like I remember listening to his interview on Desert Island Discs, and there were interesting things about how, to an extent, like the interviewer was asking him, like, why didn't you go on to do all us amazing, great things? Why didn't you become a recognized sort of concert pianist or a composer or something like this? And the answer was like, I was just having too much fun doing comedy. So it's interesting that, I mean, that tells you something about how the status of comedy in the world, people, you know, because he was in comedy, people don't take it as seriously or recognize his genius in the way that they would if he was doing something more serious. But it also just shows that the guy's incredibly clever and talented. Yeah. Impressive. Yeah. Really impressive.
Nice to, it was so nice to be able to just chat to him as well.
Yeah.
And they're warm. Like they ask questions too. You know, they, you know, beyond just, it's not just a one-way question and then they give some statement. And then, you know, it was just very memorable.
Okay, so Sandy Toksvig, tick.
Yeah.
Bill Bailey, tick.
Yeah.
Stephen Merchant as well there, tick.
We'll give it a nod.
A nod, you gave him a nod, so a kind of a partial tick.
Yeah.
Didn't you meet Russell Brand?
Yes, I did.
Russell Brand.
Yeah. That was a good one.
Oh my goodness! When was this?
This was fairly recently.
So it's in his.
This was within a year of today.
So in his incarnation as a married man, a father, and a kind of a guru, a spiritual guru.
Yeah.
So tell us about meeting Russell Brand.
So I'd stopped my time at the French newspaper at this point, but I was freelance because I just sort of started getting the podcast into a job. You know, I wasn't making very much money from it at all. I needed any kind of fill-in that I could. Yeah. And they were like, someone's sick. Can you work today? And I was like, yeah. And then the editor, the Swedish site, I was working for the Swedish site from Paris, right?
Okay.
And she messages me and she goes, work till 6 o'clock. There's a bunch of news out there today. And if you want to interview Russell Brand on the phone, I don't really want to do it at 6 o'clock. And I was like, yeah. Are you serious? Yeah, for sure. And so I'm working throughout the day thinking, I'm going to speak to Russell Brand. That's going to be great. I love him, you know. He's wonderful. And I did meet him. I'll get to that. But this is the precursor. So he rings. And the way they do it with these Hollywood celebrities or whatever is they give you a 10-minute window, right? And so you get on the phone to his agent or whatever she is. And she goes, you got 10 minutes? He's going to join you now? And I was like, okay. And he comes on the phone, just exactly like you'd imagine, you know, flamboyant and, you know, interesting and everything. And I was like, so I'm interviewing about Sweden. So I go, Russell, you're going to Sweden. And he was like, I am. And I was like, you don't sound very excited about it, Russell.
Like, I am, yes.
Yeah. Like, but he said it really like sort of, like nonchalantly, sort of.
Or like, he said, like it sounded like he had reservations about coming.
Well, I don't know. Well, my question wasn't good. Like it was just a conversation starter. Usually, people are like, "Yeah, we're gonna. I can't wait." You know, meatball straight into it.
Yeah.
But I just sort of like was testing the waters a little bit, and I was like, "You don't sound." I don't know why I said it either. I don't even know. Yeah. I guess I was thinking more like of a. It was a podcast in my head. Mm-hmm. And he just stopped, and he's like.
Wait, you said to him, you don't sound very interested.
Something like that, or excited or whatever.
Yeah.
And he just stopped and he's like, what? Like, he just sort of was like, how can you say that? But he's like, I said two words. I said two words and you've deduced from my two words that I'm not very interested. You know, he did this whole thing.
So you kind of triggered him in a way.
Yeah, but I didn't think.
Maybe in a good way, though.
Yeah, and then we got chatting and he's like, he's like, listen, you're in Sweden. He's like, are you in Sweden? Because he also is really, he talks to you like well beyond. If you ever seen him on TV in an interview, he doesn't just answer. He wants to engage.
He's incredibly deep and engaging. Yep. And he takes a lot of time to really, really connect with the person he's talking to.
And he remembers your name for everyone. I've seen it on all the YouTube videos. So he's going, Oliver, listen, Oliver, like that. And he goes, are you in Sweden? I was like, well, I'm in Paris. And he's like, what? You're a Swedish guy in Paris? I was like, oh, I'm Australian. And he goes, hang on. And he's like, you're an Australian. I'm not going to do the accent anymore. He goes, you're an Australian guy in Paris talking to me about Sweden. I'm an English guy in LA. He goes, this is the most, can't remember what he said, but the most multicultural or something phone call I've ever had. And then we just started chatting. It wasn't really an interview. We were chatting. And he was asking me about Sweden to get material for his show that was coming up. Because I'd been there for 5 years. So he was like, he wanted to know about paternity leave and the funny things that I'd sort of observed as an expat there. So we're chatting. And then out of nowhere, it cuts off. And I realized it'd been 10 minutes.
Right.
And I was like, part of me scared because I was like, oh, I didn't really get the quotes. Maybe we're just chatting.
So you're talking, 10 minutes go by and just boom, it's just phone cut. And you're like, damn.
Yeah. I was like, oh, she told me it would be 10 minutes. I was like, all right, I better listen to the recording, see what I got, if I got enough. And then the phone rang and it was his agent. She's like, Russell wants to keep talking to you.
And wasn't his agent kind of a bit, unhappy about
it.
She's like, look, Oliver, Russell wants to keep talking to you. And she's probably thinking we've got other interviews to do today. And Russell's like, no, I want to speak to him.
Get me that Australian lad. Okay, I can't do it. Anyway, so they call back. Same thing. Had a conversation. Halfway through, I was like, I'm going to get some questions in, you know, as well. But we just chat. It was really fun. And then the same thing happened. It cut off and he called back again.
Wow.
And at the end, he's like, come to the show in Stockholm in a week or whatever. I was like, I'm in Paris. I can't come. Are you coming to Paris? No, I can't come. And he's like, sort something out. I tour all the time. Talk to my agent. I didn't think it was an agent, but whatever. Helper, I don't know. Mm-hmm. So they texted me, like, I could have as many tickets as I want to the Stockholm show.
Whoa.
And I was like, I can't. I just can't. And they're like,
I'm in Paris. Yeah.
His agent says he's playing in London for a Netflix special. I don't know when. And I was like, yeah, we'll go. And so we go, and they give us a little thing to wear around our
backstage passes.
Yeah. So when we arrive, we go to the ticket desk, and there's an envelope permitting how it goes, like as long as he's happy, basically, with the performance, because it's Netflix. This is a big deal.
Wait, an envelope? What?
Envelope at the front desk that said, like, basically,
I see. As long as the show goes well, you can come backstage.
Sort of like that. Yeah, it wasn't like come backstage and have fun.
So permitting, show success permitting, you can go backstage.
Yeah, it was along those lines.
Yeah,
right?
Okay.
So we traveled from Paris for the show. Like, we went for a week, tied it in with a weekend, but we essentially went for it.
Yeah.
And then the show was great, and it seemed like the show was a success, right? So we went to the backstage bit, and there were like eight people in this room, and it was an average room. It was a fancy theater. I can't remember the name of it in London, but like one of the famous ones, I suppose.
Yeah.
I can't even remember where. Camden, maybe? I don't know. It doesn't matter. I can't remember.
Plenty of theaters it could have been, yes.
Right. So we went backstage, and there were like 8-10 people, all really, really different. And I was like, who are they? Are these they're surely not journalists. Are they family? And everyone was kind of like, half of them knew each other, the other half sort of, and there was a woman that was like severely disabled as well. And I was like, well, what am I doing here? This feels wrong. I don't think I should be here. And then he came out like a rock star, like sweating, like, you know.
With a towel over his shoulders.
Basically, it was like that. And he scanned the room, right? And he looked at me as if like, because he'd never seen me. Looked at me like, who's that guy? Okay, forget that guy. And then went to the rest of the room. And it was just like his mum.
His mum was there.
It was closest of close. And he went around and they were hugging him. It was really powerful, you know, I guess. Because it didn't really dawn on me how important filming a Netflix special must have been. You know, like, I was just like, surely he's going through this
massive,
all the time.
Massively important for a comedian if you're doing a Netflix special, because you can live and die by a Netflix special. Totally. So it would have been and also the intensity of doing a show and coming off stage and his family are there like, we're so proud of you, Russell. And he's like, emotional and hugging them. And you're standing there going, oh my God, I shouldn't be here.
And I had like a muesli bar with chocolate. You know the little things they give you? Grapes? I was just standing in the corner eating
some food that they'd put on the table.
Perrier water, you know, flavored water. And so he's doing the rounds and going around and really giving deep hugs, and people are like, oh, you did so well. Like, it was his man, all these people. And then the woman with the disability, like, he spent a lot of time with her, and he was going around the room. And I felt like such an
imposter.
An imposter.
Yeah.
He had no idea. And he came over to me, and I knew he didn't know who I was. Me and my wife were there. And I saw that he got to us.
Yeah.
And, you know, he didn't go like, "Who are you?" I was like, "Russell, I don't know if I apologized first. I either said, "Look, sorry, I feel like I shouldn't be here. I'm the journalist that talked to you about Sweden, you know?" And he sensed that I was sort of felt like an imposter.
Yeah.
And he just, he brought me in and just like hugged me.
Whoa.
He was just like, "Nah, man, it's all right. Thank you for coming. Of course I remember who you are. Everything you said to me was really useful and I used it in the show. Mm. How are you? Have you guys come from Paris?" Like, he remembered.
Yeah.
And then he just chatted to us. But I still felt guilty. Like, I mean, it wasn't like the touch of Jesus or something. I still felt like I was in the wrong place. So I was like, you know, "Thanks for everything. Great show." And at the end, I was like, "Oh, shit, great show." Yeah, you know, like, really.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I sort of forgot to say it. And he was like, "Oh, do you think so? Really?" Like, yeah. And we talked. Well, I don't know how long we talked for, but it was a good chat.
Wow.
And then I was like, "Look," I was like, you know, we had a picture together.
Yeah.
And then I was like, "You know, go to your family. Don't talk to me.
That's brilliant.
Yeah.
This is great. So, okay, there's another person ticked off the list. Mm. You've got other people though in the bag that you can tell us about, don't you? Didn't you meet Eddie Izzard?
No,
I didn't. I'm the one who met Eddie Izzard.
That's right.
I could tell the story again, but I was very lucky enough to meet him backstage. It was a very similar experience too, because I went to one of his shows with a friend who knows him.
Right.
And then the friend afterwards was like, "Hey, come backstage." So I ended up backstage there. And it was really, really similar thing. So Eddie had just done 3 hours, an hour in English, an hour in French, and an hour in German, amazing. All back to back, all part of the D-Day commemorations that happened up in Normandy a few years ago. And so he'd done this, you know, this marathon, three shows. And then, so I go backstage and I'm just standing there while there's a few people, a similar number as what you said. Mm. And Eddie's there, you know, he's like relaxing after the show. And I'm standing there going, "I feel totally out of place. I shouldn't be here." And also thinking, "I've got nothing to give. I've got nothing to offer him at all."
You couldn't balance the scales of justice for the show that he's just giving.
And like, it felt very strange because I felt like this guy has got so much to offer. He's in a similar case, a bit like, you know, Bill Bailey or Russell Brand, you know, a brilliant, brilliant person with like a lot of knowledge about lots of different things and just an incredible sort of incredibly ambitious and successful person, an actor in Hollywood films, this groundbreaking comedian and all these other things. And then there's just me, you know, standing there and I'm just, you know, I just feel like I can't even open my mouth. I've got nothing to offer, nothing to give. And because I was with my friend Yasin, we ended up going for dinner with him. And so next thing I know, I'm sitting down in a restaurant and I'm with Yasin on my left and a couple of other people. And so it's me, Yasin, and then Eddie Izzard on the other side and some other people. And every now and then Eddie's like talking to the other people. And then sometimes he turns and he talks to us. And so I'm sitting at the table, like, you know, trying not to just be part of the furniture, you know, and sort of inputting my stuff sometimes. And every, you know, when I'm talking, he's looking at me and sort of listening to me and I'm thinking, "Stop talking, Luke. You've got nothing to offer. You've got nothing to give." And then, and I was kind of blown away and starstruck and stuff. And I thought, I still really want to talk to him. And for some reason, I need to tell him how much of a big fan I am.
Right.
Because when I was living in Japan, I didn't have a TV and I had limited, you know, amount of music and CDs and things. But I had two of his stand-up shows on CD, and I used to just listen to them on repeat. That would be like my evening's entertainment.
You just say thank you.
I should have just said, "Hey, nice one."
Yeah,
you know, all your work, nice one. I should have said that, but I didn't have the foresight to do that. Instead, I attempted to tell him what he meant to me, and it didn't really work because I ramble, you see. I have this habit of rambling, and so I started rambling and I was sort of saying, "Oh yeah, I used to listen to all your stuff when I was, you know, I used to just lie in my bed, listen to your CDs and like painting this slightly weird picture." and he also doesn't know who I am.
Mm.
I'm just like, I'm Yasin's friend, I should have said. And then I was like, "So anyway, you know, listen to all your stuff and I remember all your routines." And then I went, "You're in my head now," like that, like probably with this crazy look in my eyes. And he was, he didn't really know what to say.
But those guys are so used to that kind of stuff.
Yeah, they must
be. So used to it.
But, you know, whenever you meet a famous person, you seem to know how to handle it pretty well with your thank you so much for everything you've done.
It appears to work.
Yeah, but like when I meet a famous person, I'm kind of torn because I, on one hand, I don't want to disturb them at all and I just want to let them be. And on the other hand, I can't let the opportunity go without having a conversation with the person and end up sort of messing it up by being awkward and rambling. And so saying to him, "You're in my head," was, oh God, I really regret that. I hope I get a second chance to actually have a proper
conversation. Maybe he listens to your podcast.
I don't know.
When he's running marathons.
Yeah, I know. 27 marathons in 27 days in South Africa.
He was talking about that on the Joe Rogan podcast.
Exactly, yeah, he was. Yeah. Yeah, I listened to that.
Yeah, me too.
Okay. So that's the sort of journalism stuff. Now you live in France. You were in Sweden learning Swedish. How's your learning of French going? Because obviously this is a podcast for people learning English and we're interested in language learning. So what about your experiences of learning French?
I think that's a really, in short, it's pretty good. I've learned it pretty well and can speak it decently.
What have been your sort of most positive experiences for learning French? What are the things that you've done that you feel have helped you progress in French the most?
I tell you one thing that was huge is we, for our honeymoon, we drove around France on a scooter.
Yeah.
In all the, literally the smallest roads between here and here.
Yeah, that's a whole other story as well, which is like your honeymoon. As you said, you drove around France on the small roads.
In a love heart shape.
You're making a big love heart shape. Yeah. Oh my goodness.
It was
how romantic.
4,000 kilometers at 45 kilometers an hour.
On the back of a Vespa.
Yeah, so it's 3,000 miles, 30 miles an hour-ish. For all the listeners to appreciate that.
I'm going to ask you about that if there's time.
Yeah, that's just an aside, but that was great for learning French because we stayed in so many small villages and really small, population 4 kind of thing.
Yeah.
And if you need to get anything done, you need to speak French. In Paris, you can almost always get by in English. Yeah. If the person doesn't speak English, someone nearby does.
Yeah.
But, so to answer your question, being in a position where you have no choice. So people sometimes get that by visiting their mother-in-law or whatever, someone, or going to a retirement home. But that kind of thing for us traveling around was really, really helpful. You know, if you break down and you need to fix the brake pads, you have to figure out how to say it.
Yeah.
And even if you don't know the word for brake pads, you need to describe it. You can't just keep saying brake pads.
Yeah.
You know?
You have to work out new ways of getting around the problem by using other words in French that you know. And then the guy's like, oh! And then he tells you the word for brake pads.
Le brake pad, probably.
Le pad de.
Yeah, this morning. Yeah, I did know what it was in French, but I've forgotten. You know, I needed it once.
Yeah.
Frein, it is F-R-E-I-N-S.
Okay.
Anyway, that really helped a lot. But what you said is interesting, and I wonder if your listeners, in fact, they probably are speaking 3 languages. You know, if they're learning English, maybe they speak another one.
A lot of them,
well.
Yeah, definitely.
And I found that really intriguing. So when I came to France, so I already spoke a bit of French, but I essentially forgot it all because it had been 10 years since I'd spoken a word of it. And I think my brain has room for 2 languages. So every Swedish word I learned, a French one went out, kind of like that.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So by the time I came to Paris, I spoke very good Swedish, very good English, 0 French essentially.
Okay, and then you started learning French and it kind of replaced Swedish.
Yeah, it's weird, right? So, but when I was learning French, and I thought this was really weird, is if something really quickly happened, like a waiter would come and put, I don't know, water on the table, I'd answer in Swedish, even though we're in Paris. Because it was my reflex backup language. Okay. So my mind was going, not English, Oliver. You're not in an English-speaking country. Use your backup. So say thank you in your backup language. So I was like, taxi-mikke.
Right. So your brain is going, English is the default setting.
Yeah.
And if not English, divert to other language.
Yep.
And there was one room, one port. One space
for the cable to go.
One USB port for another language. And Swedish was still plugged into that port.
Well, because it's so quick. When it's a glass getting put down, you're saying thank you. That's a lot of ports and changings to do in a millisecond. You know, if someone comes up and says bonjour, ça va, you go, okay, French port, you can kind of figure it out. Yeah. But when I came here, I found that really, really tricky. And then as time has passed, I spend a lot of time in Sweden now because I'm married to a Swedish woman.
Yeah, yeah.
So I get to practice them. And now that I'm practicing them all at the same time, it's been a lot more manageable. If we had this conversation 4 years ago, I would have just been talking about how there's only room for two languages in your head ever. Okay. But then as time has passed and I've been learning both, so I'm still always learning French and always learning Swedish, they can coexist up there.
Right.
And I know a lot of your listeners will be like, hey, I speak three languages or four. It's not that hard.
Yeah.
But it's, you know.
So your first thought, you were starting to think that either for you or for people in general, that there's only really, in the human mind, there's only space for two.
And crucially, I'm talking about that you've learned as an adult. I mean, these kids who grow up in Canada and speak French and English,
yeah.
That doesn't, that's a whole different story.
But you're talking about in adulthood.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's what you previously were starting to think,
yep.
That I've only got room for two.
Yeah.
But then then your habits changed,
yeah.
Because you started going to Sweden again more often,
yeah.
And then you realize, oh no, more than two is possible, yeah. In adulthood.
That's weird.
So what do you think the reason is then?
Like, I think it's that people say that language is like a muscle and yeah. You got to stretch it to be able to use it. And I saw with my French that I'd spoken as a sort of late teenager, early 20s,
mm-hmm.
that I hadn't stretched it for 10 years.
Yeah.
It was gone. Like, I'm sure I remembered words or phrases, but I couldn't do anything.
There would have been some probably neural memory
something
there,
like that.
But the muscle itself had wasted away.
Yeah. But I couldn't do anything. I remember I tried to take a taxi when I arrived here from Sweden the first time. And I was like, I'm going to talk to this cab driver. And I was like, I can't. Oh my God, I can't at all. I can't.
Yeah.
I couldn't say anything. It's like, it's gone. Plus the university French that I learned in Western Australia 10 years ago wasn't about like taxis and stuff. It was just, it was like reading like Voltaire or something. And you didn't understand it. It was like doing algebra. You had to figure it out and prove that you could to get the test score.
Yeah, I see. Yeah.
Didn't really work.
Okay. So do you actually have any sort of routine in terms
now,
of learning both of the languages?
Well, no, with Swedish, every time I go there, I speak Swedish.
Yeah.
Like, that's it.
I mean, a study routine, exactly.
Yeah, well, here, I'm doing... Well, the sponsor of my show is audiobooks that teach French. I won't go on about it because this is your show, but I do these audiobooks. It's part of the deal that they'll be my sponsor if I do them.
I see.
You know? So I got to use it, which is it's pretty good.
So they're audiobooks?
Yeah.
Is it just stories or are there exercises and things?
So it's not like Harry Potter in French.
Yeah.
It's exercises. So it starts off, you know, the story of a girl in Paris.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the end of it tells a story, you repeat it, kind of like in Love Actually, where they're, you know, he's learning Portuguese or whatever.
Yeah.
And then at the end, they put all the words that are interesting, translate into English, little things there. But it's a pretty good method. I don't know that they're my sponsor, but it actually is.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they don't focus on the unnecessary stuff.
Okay.
Like, they don't... The word subjunctive, this frightful tense...
What do you mean?
Doesn't even come up.
Subjunctive being a linguistic term to describe an aspect of grammar.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, because that's the thing. Sometimes if you're learning grammar, you end up learning all of the meta language to describe the grammar rather than the actual language itself.
And then you get in a taxi, you don't know how to talk to them.
Right. So this, your method that you're using with your audiobooks is they teach you grammar without teaching you grammar kind of thing.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
It seeps in.
Yeah. But it's a lot of listen and repeat then. A lot of that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, hear the sentence, repeat it and stuff. Yeah, that's very good. That actually surprisingly deals with a lot of different skills.
Well, I think what's cool about that kind of stuff is you find yourself saying things you'd never say, right? And then it's in your head. So the next time that you, like, just silly phrases, like one I remember from recently was you know, in English, I'm not even sure I'm going to remember it right now, but I used it at the time. It was when you're in English, you go down the stairs two by two.
Okay.
You know, he's so quick, he's going down two by two.
Yeah.
But in French, it's four by four.
Uh-huh.
Right? Yeah. I think maybe three by three. It's different.
It's
in
not two by two.
This is like 6 months ago I saw this one.
Yeah, yeah.
It's something like quatre à quatre, whatever.
Yeah.
And I remember I wrote it down. I was like, I'm going to use that this week. And I did. And that's how it was in there, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So you wouldn't – I don't know how
– No, it's all good.
Yeah.
So every road leads to Rome kind of thing.
Yeah.
Meaning that every approach that you use to learn your language, as long as you're doing it on a regular basis – as long as you're in contact with the language, engaging with it, then good. Like, you know, everyone always kind of doubts whether the method that they're using is the right method.
I think the secret is,
the secret is to keep doing
a method.
To have something, do something, and keep doing it regularly, and hopefully enjoy it.
Yeah,
and just keep going. Like, don't
even stop. Just 10 minutes a day.
Yep.
Like, I met a Polish girl who's moving to Paris the other day, and she was like, oh, the language is so hard. And I said, I know you know this, but my tip, just do 10 minutes a day or 15 minutes a day. Just do it every single day. Yeah. Don't worry. It doesn't matter how you do it. Just do it. She didn't care what I said.
You're right. A lot of people expect to have one single approach that will solve all the problems, and also one single session of practice that will solve all the problems.
Yeah.
It doesn't work like that.
It's
like one podcast episode that you listen to is not going to solve all your problems. No. One bit of work you do from a page or from something is not going to solve it. But it's a compound effect of time plus practice multiplied by motivation.
I'd say you have to listen to 580 podcast episodes.
Yeah, at least 580.
That's what I'd say.
Yeah, at least that. Can you tell us then about going around France on the back of a scooter?
I'll do the short version because I feel that we're running out of time.
Yeah.
But first, before I forget it, can I do a shout out to one of your listeners that I met?
Yes, please do.
Mark. Mark.
Hello, Mark. Or is it Bonjour, Mark?
It's Bonjour, Mark. He's okay. In Paris.
Yeah.
So he contacted me because he knows I love... So he heard about my show, and the last time I was on this show.
Mm-hmm.
Big fan of yours. I'm sure he's listening.
Oh, hi, Mark. Hello, Mark.
And he said he works at the town hall, and he works for a guy that has similar interests that I have. Mm. And he's like, I could set me up for an interview with him. And it sort of hasn't happened yet, but he goes, I could show you the town hall if you want. And I met him, and we went and looked at the town hall. And I was like, how did you find my podcast? He's like, oh, man. He's like, oh, I love Luke. And then,
Oh, wow, great.
So,
A ninja.
A ninja.
That's what I call a ninja. Someone who listens to my podcast and never actually gets in touch with
Maybe
me.
Maybe he has.
Maybe he has got in touch with me. It's possible.
Yeah.
I do get quite a lot of messages.
I like that.
But he's a ninja. So I've got a ninja in the town hall.
But see, if you had talked about wanting to see the town hall, he probably would have invited you.
You know?
See that? I'm always talking. The town hall is my favorite building.
Yeah, why?
I love it. I just think it's beautiful. The big city hall, the one down by the river.
Yeah.
I love it. I don't know. I could stand out the front of that and just look at that. There's a lot going on.
Mm.
The Eiffel Tower, yeah. The Notre Dame's pretty cool. Everyone likes that. There's town hall.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd like to stand in front of the town hall with you and you can talk me through it.
I don't even know what I'd talk you through.
But just like, look, that windowsill looks interesting.
The whole thing is just, there's a lot going on. There's a lot, like at the Notre Dame facade, there's a lot of statues and a lot of shapes, and there's the windows, and you wonder if Anne Hidalgo, the mayor, is running around in there naked. I don't know. But I just like it. And sometimes I do tours in Paris, and I take people, and I take them to the front, and I go, behold, the town hall, and I can tell they don't really care.
They're like, yeah, so big building, so watch.
Where's the Eiffel Tower?
Where's the one that's in the Disney movies?
Yeah.
Is it in a Disney movie? Yeah. No, it's not.
Yeah.
Don't care.
Yeah, that's a bit like, but I, you know, sometimes someone else's enthusiasm can be contagious.
Yeah.
It hasn't happened yet, but I'm working on it.
So you're giving a shout out to Mark there.
Yeah, hi, Mark.
And just before we finish then, you're going to give us the short version of the...
Yeah, I'll give you the 30-second version.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So we got this little scooter, red scooter, and drove all around the country for 2 months, stopping, seeing all the main things you can imagine. You know, the big cities, the little cities, you know, the lavender fields of Provence, across the Alps.
On a scooter?
Yeah, 10 kilometers an hour. That's how slow it was.
Whoa.
It took the whole day. And by the time we'd done it, we were done. We had direct back to Paris. Because that gig, like, it was...
Wait, so you...
We're in Annecy. Have you been to Annecy?
I have been to Annecy.
So
it's
beautiful.
Beautiful place.
Yeah.
Amazing lake.
Yeah.
You weren't there in August, were you?
I was there in October.
Ah, because in August they have an amazing firework display.
Oh, with all the mountains in the background.
Oh, my goodness. Oh. And you go out on a boat on the lake and you see the fireworks above
like
the lake.
Yeah.
And the fireworks last for an hour.
Excessive.
It's really, really excessive.
Fireworks. Three minutes.
So expensive as well. And I remember watching them and it was like, hold on a minute. How long has this been going on for? And it's been going on for 40 minutes and then it keeps going. It's like, oh my goodness, how much did this cost? It's amazing, but oh wow, that's it.
Make a water feature instead.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It lasts forever, like in Vegas or something.
You build a little hospital or something.
But, yeah, that's better. Yeah.
But anyway, it was pretty impressive. Yeah, beautiful place. Mm. So, all right. All this stuff you wrote, you crossed the Alps on your scooter.
Yeah, so to get in there, it's the Alps, and then to get out, it's the Alps and the Jura Mountains. It's really steep.
Yeah,
and
this is just on a Vespa. How many CCs is
50.
This? 50 CCs. With two of you on it, and some bags and stuff.
Yep. So anyone who knows what 50 cc, it's basically a bicycle. Like, it's nothing.
Yeah.
And people would wave and cheer and beep their horns, and like, you know, like it was a bit of a sight.
Did it break down?
Yep. It broke down once, or almost broke down a couple of times, but it had a proper breakdown in the middle. I mean, the middle of nowhere. And
what happened to the bike?
In the sunflowers. It was the brake pads.
Right.
Something came loose, and every time the wheel went round, it went tuk, 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 tuk.
Right, so you couldn't.
No, I had to stop, and I tried to fix it. We didn't have the right tool, and I could tighten it, and then you'd go for 500 meters, and it would be out again. So we pulled over on the side of the road, no traffic, just really nowhere.
How was the weather as well at that point?
Beautiful weather. Though. Okay. It was beautiful. It was August.
Yeah.
And then these farmers came along, and they saved the day. That's the long story short.
Okay.
But the best bit at the end of it, so I was missing this Allen key, specific shape, sort of like an IKEA key, right?
Yeah.
To tighten it. And he had one. And so he fixed it. And at the end, he's like, I've got a gift for you. And he disappeared. He got on a push bike and disappeared and came back. And he held out his like hand in a fist and put something in my hand. He's like, this is for you. I hope you don't need to use it. And he had an extra Allen key.
Beautiful.
The exact right one. And, you know, he's like, get going, you know, the sun's going to set soon. It was amazing. So things like that happening across the whole country.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's great. And that scooter is now parked outside my flat.
Yeah, we saw it from the balcony.
So it's still going, huh?
Yeah, it's due to... You know, one last thing I'll say is when we were crossing those mountains, you know on Everest, when people die, they have to be left up there.
Yeah.
And so you can judge how high you've gone or how far you've gone by these dead bodies.
Right.
So there's one guy that's really famous, Green Boots. Have you heard of this?
No.
So there's a website, Dead People of Everest or something. Anyway, so people go, okay, we made it to Green Boots. Mm-hmm. We need the new oxygen, whatever.
Yeah.
I was thinking if the scooter didn't make it across the Alps, that I'd leave it on the side of the road so that people, foolish scooter drivers in the future, could go, oh, we're at Red Scoots.
Right, exactly.
We should turn back. You know?
Yeah. Like a little marker of, you know, go continue at your own risk.
Yeah, exactly. But it's due to probably retire, that scooter.
Yeah, really.
It's going strong, but I mean, you got to be careful, right?
Yeah, I think so. All right. Well, thank you for telling us your stories about your adventures on the scooter and the people that you've interviewed and learning languages and Notre Dame and all that sort of stuff. And I hope that the live video that you're going to do with, what's her name again?
Caroline de Maigret.
Caroline de Maigret. I hope that that goes really, really well and you don't have any technical problems. Just remind my listeners, if they want to see the conversation you have with Caroline, and check out the other stuff. Where do they go? Where's the best place?
These are podcast people, so they know to subscribe to a podcast.
They know how to get podcasts. Yeah,
yeah. Go. That's the most helpful to me. If you go and just subscribe, but the website's theearfultower.com, and that will give a pretty good introduction to everything there.
Okay, theearfultower.com, and the podcast is The Earful Tower. If you search your podcasting app or whatever for that, you will undoubtedly find it. And also, yeah, the website and the YouTube channel, The Earful Tower. All right, nice one. Thanks for talking to us.
Thank you very much for having me on your show.
Pleasure. Have a good day.
You too.
So that was Oliver G on the podcast again. I really hope you enjoyed that conversation full of stories. If you struggled to understand everything that was said, I just want to say congratulations. I mean, congratulations and well done for listening all the way through to this point. I know sometimes it's difficult to follow these long, fast conversations on my podcast, but I truly believe that you can make progress if you manage to just keep listening. Sometimes you'll get lost and you won't understand, but try to tolerate the bits that you can't understand and use the bits that you do understand to help you guess the rest and then keep going. The best language learners persevere even when things aren't completely clear. So stay positive and keep it up. As ever, I look forward to reading your comments in the comments section. If you have anything to share or any thoughts regarding any of the things that came up in this episode, on the podcast page, on the episode page, you will find loads of links and videos relating to things we talked about in this conversation, including, and I'm going to list them now, we've got the episode of The Earful Tower, Oliver's podcast, the episode that he did about the Notre Dame Cathedral. That's the one where he spoke to a tour guide who is like the inside man. So if you want to know all the details about what happened with the fire and what's going on and what's happening next, you can listen to that. And that's linked on the page for this episode. Also, you've got a YouTube video of Oliver's tour of Notre Dame when it's empty. And it was filmed before the fire. So you get to see inside Notre Dame Cathedral without lots of tourists in there. And you get to see what it looked like before the fire. Then there's Oliver's video of Parisians singing hymns while Notre Dame burns in the background. That's the one we talked about, that kind of eerie video where groups of Parisians were standing around on bridges and things and singing hymns. Then there's the video of my walking tour with Oliver in the Square de Batignolles, which is that park that we walked around. It's just a 5-minute video. Bill Bailey, because we talked about him, the comedian. There's a video of Bill Bailey doing some comedy and playing around with minor and major keys in music. It's very entertaining. There's a link to episode 462, which was called British Comedy Bill Bailey. That was the episode I did about Bill Bailey. So if you want to know all that you need to know about him and understand some of his comedy, then you can go back into the archive and listen to episode 462. And then there's the video that Oliver went on to film. You know, he was talking about going to meet this this model, author, music producer, Caroline de Maigret. Check out my pronunciation. Caroline de Maigret, right? I'm probably pronouncing it wrong. I'm anglicizing it. Anyway, remember that after the conversation with me, he went off to meet this model. She's not just a model, she's a producer and an author and stuff. He went off to meet her and they did a walking tour, and you can see the video, and it's on the page for this episode too. Okay, all right, so this is the end of episode 599. Episode 600 will be the next one, of course, I think, unless I suddenly have something to tell you in the meantime. I hope you can join me for the YouTube live stream when I will be recording episode 600. Let me just remind you that that's going to happen at 3 p.m. on Friday the 7th of June on my YouTube channel. 3 p.m. Paris time, that's Central European time, Friday the 7th of June on my YouTube channel. You'll find the link to that on the front page of my website in the comments section. If you can't attend the live stream, then I am sorry. Obviously, time differences and other things probably mean that, you know, you might not be able to watch. Or maybe you're just like, no, it's all right, I'll just watch it later. I don't know. But yes, you will be able to watch the video later. And obviously, you'll be able to listen to the audio in episode 600. The theme of the live stream is Ask Me Anything. Although I do reserve the right not to answer questions if I don't fancy it. Like, for example, what colour is your underwear? You know, mind your own business. That's what colour my underwear is. Not that anyone has ever asked me that, but it's just an example, you know, or what are your card details or, you know, that sort of thing, which, again, no one's going to ask me. But you know what I'm saying. You can ask me questions about English or whatever comes to you, and I will try to answer the questions as best I can and as briefly as I can in the time that we have available. I've got no idea how many people are going to be attending the live stream. I've no idea at all. So it could be, you know, it could be loads. I mean, comparatively loads. It could be a lot. It could be a small number. So if there's like, you know, hundreds, even thousands, I don't know. I expect I'm going to get more than 100. It'll be in the hundreds, I would say. But who knows? So if there are loads of people, it might be difficult for everyone to get their questions in. I understand that. And I'll be kind of moderating the comments as I go. But anyway, it's just going to be a bit of fun and a chance for you to ask me some questions. Hopefully I'll be able to answer them all, but I probably won't be able to answer absolutely everything. So have a think. You can think about some questions you'd like to ask me. And obviously, you know, someone asked me in some comment section somewhere, like, how many questions can we ask you, Luke? Well, I probably keep it to one, but it depends on how many people there are and how many questions are coming in. So if you've got others, feel free to try and ask them. But I think it's probably going to be one question each. But if there's only like five people, then go for it. Also, premium subscribers, remember, premium episodes are coming. I'm working on several premium series at the moment. And so June will see more premium stuff and less free stuff. It's going to be mostly a month of premium. Okay? Right then, so that's it. Until episode 600, I will now say goodbye. Bye. 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 Thanks for listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
If you enjoyed this episode of Luke's English Podcast, consider signing up for Luke's English Podcast Premium. You'll get regular premium episodes with stories, vocabulary, grammar, and pronunciation teaching from me, and the usual moments of humour and fun. Plus, with your subscription, you will be directly supporting my work and making this whole podcast project possible. For more information about Luke's English Podcast Premium, go to teacherluke.co.uk/premium info.